Wonderful Companions. This is Joyce, your Radio Reading Service volunteer broadcaster, welcoming you to this edition of Animal Companions, where we read about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Today I'll be reading another chapter in The Case of the Careless Kitten by Earl Stanley Gardner, and if we have some time, I'll be reading some articles and newsletters about the animals in our lives. We're going to begin today's readings with The Case of the Careless Kitten by Earl Stanley Gardner. In the last chapter, we learned that there were objects that were found in the car of the dead man that were quite interesting. Some, but not all of them, belonged to the missing Franklin Shore. Perry had some ideas about the case, though he wasn't sharing them with anyone just yet. And now we turn to Chapter 9. Matilda Shore, propped up in the hospital bed, surveyed her visitors, her eyes showing anger. "What is the meaning of this?" she demanded. "Why," Gerald Shore explained, "we heard you were ill and naturally wanted to see if there was anything we could do." "Who told you?" "Mr. Mason learned about it." She turned to Mason. "How?" she demanded. Mason bowed. "Just casually." Gerald Shore put it hastily. "We had to see you, Matilda. Some things have happened which you should know about." "I've been sick. I don't want visitors. How did you know when I was? Why did you bring these people here?" Gerald Shore said, "Perry Mason, the lawyer, and Della Street, his secretary, are interested in certain matters which are important to you." Matilda Shore swung her big head on its thick neck, surveyed Perry Mason, and said, "Humph." "How did you know where I was?" she asked after a moment. "Helen Kendall said, Como was very much alarmed about you. He said you'd been poisoned, that you acted like the kitten. You told him to drive you to the hospital." "Why, that little slant-eyed hypocrite," Matilda Shore said. "I told him to keep his mouth shut." "He did," Payson said, "until after he learned that we knew all about it. I am the one who found out about what happened. I didn't talk with Como. Your niece talked with him after I had told her where you were." "How did you find out?" Mason smiled. "I must protect my sources of information." Heaving herself up to a more erect sitting position, Matilda Shore said, "And will you kindly tell me why my whereabouts and my physical condition should be any of your business?" "But Matilda," Gerald interrupted to explain, "there's something about which you have to know. We simply had to reach you." "Well, what is it? Stop beating around the bush," Gerald said. "Franklin is alive." "That's no news to me, Gerald Shore. Of course he's alive. I've always known he was alive. Ran off with a trollop and left me to twiddle my thumbs. I suppose this means you've heard from him." "You shouldn't have condemned him too hastily, Aunt Matilda," Helen Kendall said in a voice which failed to carry the least conviction. "No fool like an old fool," Matilda grumbled. "Man who has almost 60, running off with a woman half his age." Mason turned to Gerald Shore. "Perhaps you'd better tell her how it happened you know he's alive." "He telephoned us this afternoon. Rather, he telephoned Helen." The bedsprings heaved as Matilda twisted her big body around. She opened a drawer in the table near the bed, took out a pair of steel-rimmed spectacles, adjusted them to her nose, and looked at her niece as though she were examining a bug through a microscope. "So he telephoned you? Afraid of me, I suppose." The door opened. A nurse glided into the room, her starched uniform giving forth a businesslike rustle. "You mustn't excite the patient. She really isn't supposed to have visitors. You can only stay a few minutes." Matilda glared at her. "I'm all right. Please leave us alone." "But the doctor..." Matilda Shore motioned imperiously toward the door. The nurse hesitated a moment. "I'll have to notify the doctor," she murmured, and then withdrew. Matilda swung back to Helen Kendall. "So he telephoned you, and you didn't say a word about it? That's gratitude. For 10 years I've devoted myself to your..." Gerald Shore spoke hastily. "You see, Matilda, she thought he might be dealing with an imposter, and she didn't want to disturb you with the news until she made certain." "Why did he telephone her?" Matilda demanded. That's just it, Gerald said placatingly. Everything indicated that they were dealing not with Franklin, but with some impostor who wanted to impose upon the family. We thought it would be better to establish a preliminary contact before telling you anything about it. I'm not a child. I understand, Matilda, but we thought it was better this way. Helen Kendall said, he told me particularly that I couldn't see him unless I followed his instructions to the letter. Did you see him? Matilda asked, peering through her spectacles at her niece. No, we didn't. A man by the name of Leach was to lead us to him, and something happened so that Leach couldn't do it. Matilda Shore said, it was Franklin, all right. Sounds just like him, trying to sneak in the back way. Wants to get hold of Helen, play up to her, get her sympathies aroused, and get her to intercede with me. Tell him to stop hiding behind a woman's skirts and come out in the open and meet me. I'll tell him a thing or two. I'll file a suit for divorce the minute he shows his face. I've been waiting 10 years for this. Mason said, I trust your poisoning wasn't serious, Mrs. Shore. She rolled her eyes toward him and said, poisoning is always serious. How did it happen? Gerald asked. Got hold of the wrong bottle, that's all. Had some heart medicine and some sleeping tablets in the medicine cupboard. Had a bottle of stout before I went to bed. Then went to get some sleeping tablets. Got the wrong bottle. When did you suspect it was the wrong bottle? Mason asked. Had a little spasm, she replied. Rang for Como. Told him to get out of the car, to notify my doctor, get me up to the hospital. Had enough presence of mind to drink a lot of mustard water and to get rid of as much stuff as I could. Told the doctor about how I'd gone to the medicine cabinet in the dark to take some sleeping medicine after I'd had my stout. Told him I'd got the wrong bottle by mistake. Not certain he believes me. Anyhow, he got busy and fixed me up. I'm all right now. Want you to keep your mouth shut about the poisoning. I don't want to have to police interfering in my business. Now then, I want to find out about Franklin. Let's get him out into the open. Mason said, has it ever occurred to you, Mrs. Shore, that there might be some connection between the return of your husband and the two instances of the poisoning which have occurred in your household? Two? She asked. The kitten and you. Matilda Shore studied him for the space of several seconds and said, fiddlesticks! I got the wrong bottle, that's all. I'm asking you if the idea had occurred to you that the drink was poisoned. Bosh! I'll tell you, I got the wrong bottle. Don't you think you owe it to yourself to do something about it? Well, what should I do? Mason said. At least you should take steps to prevent a recurrence. If someone has made an attempt on your life, you certainly should do something about it. You mean the police? Well, why not? The police? I'm not going to have that messing in my life and giving out a lot more stuff to the newspaper. That's what always happens. You call the police to protect you, and some idiot who wants to see his picture in the paper rushes out to the reporters and tells them the whole story. I won't have it. Besides, I just made a mistake. Mason said, unfortunately, Mrs. Shore, after what's happened tonight, there's going to be a lot of publicity. Well, what do you mean, after what happened tonight? This man Leach, who was to lead us to your husband, failed to do so. Well, why? Mason said, because someone stopped him. Oh, how? By a .38 caliber bullet in the left side of his head, fired while he was sitting in the automobile, waiting to keep an appointment with us. You mean he's dead? Yes. Murdered? Apparently. When did it happen? We don't know exactly. Well, where? By the reservoir, back of Hollywood in the mountains. Who was this Leach? I mean, how does he fit in? Apparently he was a friend of your husband's. Well, what makes you think so? I never heard of him. Gerald Shore said, well, Franklin telephoned Helen. He told her to get in touch with Mr. Leach, that Leach would take him to Franklin. Matilda motioned to Helen, get these men out of here. Get my clothes out of the closet. I'm going to dress, and I'm going home. If Franklin's around, he'll be pussyfooting around in the house, trying to wheedle me. I've been waiting 10 years for this, and I'm not going to be shut up in any hospital when it happens. I'll show him he can't walk out on me. Mason made no move to leave. I'm afraid you'll have to get your doctor's permission. I think the nurse has gone to the telephone, and I know she's going to call him. I don't need anybody's permission to get up and go out, Matilda said. Thanks to the emetic I took, I got off with a very light dose of poison. I have the constitution of an ox. I shook it off. I'm all right now. I'm going out under my own power, Mason said. I wouldn't advise you to get up and put any strain on your heart. We want to let you know about your husband, and we wanted to find out what happened and what you intend to do about the poisoning. I tell you, it was an accident, and I don't want the police. A knock sounded on the door. Gerald Shore said, that's probably the doctor or a couple of husky attendants called on by the hospital to eject us forcibly. Matilda Shore called out, well, come on in. Let's get this over with. Let them eject me. The door pushed open. Lieutenant Tragg and a detective entered the room. Mason greeted them with a bow. Mrs. Shore, may I have the honor of presenting Lieutenant Tragg of Homicide? I think he wants to ask you a few questions. Tragg bowed to Mrs. Shore, turned and bowed again to Mason. Rather cleverly done, counselor. The more I see of you, the more I am forced to respect your very deft touch. Referring to what this time, Mason asked? The manner in which you threw me off the trail, temporarily by insisting that you and your friend should be permitted to accompany me to the Castle Gate Hotel. It wasn't until after I'd left you that it began to occur to me you'd tossed me a bait, and that I'd very credulously grabbed at it, Mason said. Putting it that way, it sounded very much like a conspiracy, Tragg said. Well, draw your own conclusions. I started checking all the angles of the case just as soon as I realized your insistence on accompanying me had led me to let you go. Now, Mrs. Shore, if you don't mind, I'll hear about the poisoning. Well, I do mind. I mind very much. This is unfortunate, Tragg announced. I ate something that disagreed with me, that's all. The hospital records indicate that you took some medicine by the mistake, Tragg pointed out. All right, I went to the medicine cabin and I took some medicine by mistake. Tragg was suavely solicitous. That's unfortunate. May I ask what time this was, Mrs. Shore? Oh, about 9 o'clock, I guess. I didn't notice the next time. And as I understand it, you had prepared for bed, had your regular nightly glass of stout, turned out the light, and went to the medicine cabinet in the dark? Yes. I thought I was taking sleeping tablets. I just got the wrong bottle. Tragg seemed particularly sympathetic. You didn't notice any difference in the taste? No. Your sleeping medicine is in the form of tablets? Yes. Kept in the medicine cabinet? Yes. And you didn't notice any difference in the taste of the tablets that you took? No. In fact, I washed them down with water. I had a glass of water in my hand, tossed the tablets into my mouth with the other, and washed them down right away. I see. Then you were holding the glass of water in your right hand as you tossed the tablets into your mouth with your left? That's right. And you put the cap back on the bottle and returned it to the medicine cabinet? Yes. That took both hands. What difference does that make? I'm simply trying to find out, that's all. If it was an accident, there's nothing to investigate. Well, it was an accident. Of course, Tragg said soothingly. I'm simply trying to get the facts so I can make a report that it was an accident. Mollified, Mrs. Shore explained. Well, that's what happened. I screwed the top back on the bottle. And put it back in the medicine cabinet? Tragg asked. Yes. And then picked up your glass of water, holding the tablet in your left hand? Yes. Then tossed them into your mouth and drank the water immediately? Yes. And you didn't taste anything bitter? No. I believe it was strychnine poisoning, wasn't it, Mrs. Shore? I don't know. Tragg's voice showed his sympathy. Most unfortunate, he said, and then asked casually, and what were the strychnine tablets doing in your medicine cabinet, Mrs. Shore? You were using them for some particular purpose, I suppose. Her eyes studied the detective's countenance. They're a heart stimulant. I kept them there in case I needed them. On a doctor's prescription? Tragg asked. Yes, of course. What doctor prescribed them? She said, I don't think that has anything to do with you, young man. How many tablets did you take? Oh, I don't know, 2 or 3. And you put the bottle back in the medicine cabinet? Yes, I've told you that before. Right next to the bottle of the sleeping tablets? I guess so. I tell you, it was dark. I reached up in the general vicinity and got the bottle, which I thought contained sleeping tablets. Trag said, it's most unfortunate. Well, what is? The fact that a search of your medicine cabinet reveals that there are neither sleeping tablets nor strychnine tablets in it. Mrs. Shore straightened up still further. You mean that you've been in my house and searched my medicine cabinet? Yes. What authority did you have to do that? She demanded. Trag said without raising his voice. Perhaps, Mrs. Shore, I'd better ask you a question instead. What do you mean by lying to the police about an attempt which was made to poison you? There wasn't any attempt to poison me. I believe that a kitten was poisoned at your house this afternoon and taken to Dr. Blakely's small animal hospital. I don't know anything about a kitten. Trag smiled. Come on, Mrs. Shore, you'll have to do better than that. Falsifying evidence, you know, constitutes a crime. There are 2 attorneys in this room who will bear me out in that. If there was a poison in that bottle of stout, the police want to know about it, and it would be exceedingly unwise for you to hamper their investigation. The door of the hospital room pushed open. A man entered hastily, said, What's going on here? I'm the doctor in charge of this case. The patient isn't to be disturbed. She had a severe shock. I'm going to ask you all to leave. Immediately. Matilda Shore looked at him and said, I guess you mean well, doctor, but you've got here just 5 minutes too late. And that's the end of chapter 9 in The Case of the Careless Kitten. Earl Stanley Gardner is the author. Our next reading comes from Words of Kindness, the newsletter of the Kindness Ranch, spring 2026. The day something in me shifted. Recently, I said goodbye to Rocky, a big, beautiful dog who changed my life in ways I'm still trying to understand. First, there was the fear of cancer, then the diagnosis, and then far too soon, there was goodbye. It all moved me quickly, but because of our compassionate veterinarians and a lot of love, we were given precious time with him before the end. On January 20th, we helped him cross over. It was the hardest thing I've ever done and the most loving as well. Just 1 week later, the Kindness Ranch team was on the road to Los Angeles to pick up the last of 47 beagles rescued from the United States-funded research facility in China. That's the reality of this work. The highs and the lows don't wait for each other. One moment you're shattered, the next you're showing up because 17 little lives need you to depend upon. On the drive back from Los Angeles to Kindness Ranch, one tiny beagle caught Katie's eye. She was smaller than the others, just 11 pounds. Our sanctuary cats outweigh her. Her eyes were heavy, half asleep, like she wasn't sure if she could fully trust the world yet. When she arrived, Katie couldn't stop holding her. You look at a dog that small and imagine that she's been through, and it just stops you in your tracks. The next day, I went to see the 17 beagles who had just traveled halfway around the world. They were adjusting beautifully, curious, social, ready for more. But that little girl was sitting quietly at her kennel gate, just watching me. I bent down to pick her up. She lowered her head, leaned into my chest, and let out a long sigh. And something in me shifted. Losing Rocky broke me in ways I wouldn't have any words for anytime soon. That's part of loving deeply. It's the unspoken agreement we make when we open our hearts and homes to a dog. The joy is immense, the goodbye is crushing, and it's worth every single time. I often tell people who adopt from Kindness Ranch that when you adopt one dog, you make room for 2, the one you take home and the one that will take the place at the sanctuary, beginning their journey toward a family. Rocky will always be part of me. He made me a better human being. Nothing will ever replace the bond we had. I will never love another dog in the exact way I loved him, but that doesn't mean I'm out of love to give. On February 10th, Katie and I welcomed Faith, that tiny 11-pound beagle from China, into our home and into our hearts. Not to replace Rocky, not to fill the space he left, but to honor him, to continue the legacy of love that he started. Grief is personal. It looks different for everyone. This path isn't right for all, but it's okay. But for me, bringing faith home felt like the most honest way to carry Rocky forward. So tonight, hug your companions a little tighter. Thank them. Sit with them. Let them know that they matter. And when you're ready, whether that's tomorrow or years from now, consider opening your heart to another dog who's waiting. You can visit Kindness Ranch, meet the dogs who are ready for their second chance, adopt, share their stories, and support the mission in whatever way you can. Because love doesn't end when we say goodbye. It grows when we choose to give it again. So wrote John Raymer, the executive director of the Kindness Ranch, in the article found in the newsletter, Words of Kindness, Spring 2026. Our next articles come from the Ironwood Pig Sanctuary, the February 2026 edition. This article is called Reunited, and it is written by Donna, who's one of the people who work at the Ironwood Pig Sanctuary. Around 8 years ago, Mike bought a mini pig for $400 from an ad in the newspaper. He named his cute little baby Deano and expected his family to enjoy a miniature pet. The family did love Deano, but he grew beyond their expectations, as well as their yard. They had him neutered, socialized him well, and fed him unusual treats, like flowers. Mike worked for flowers, delivery service, and sometimes had leftover bouquets to take home. Deano enjoyed munching on the floral offerings. Because of Deano's size, Mike and his family felt he needed more space and thought he would be happier living at their friend's ranch. They planned to visit him often and looked forward to seeing him again. Less than a week later, when they scheduled a visit, Mike's friend said that Deano had disappeared and he had no idea where he had wandered off. Despite efforts to find their pig, Deano was simply gone. Fast forward over 2.5 years to the Ironwood Pig Sanctuary. Late one afternoon, Mike made a delivery of flowers to the sanctuary. Oddly enough, the flower delivery was an accident. There had been a mix-up with addresses the recipient, one of our supporters, had on file with Chewy's. She was supposed to have gotten flowers in sympathy for the loss of her pet. But that pet's name was Murphy, but we ended up getting him. Mike was so excited to drive up to the pig sanctuary. He had no idea there was such a thing. He showed Lisa the pictures of his pig Deano, who had been lost. Lisa immediately recognized the photos as our polar bear. She took Mike out to be reunited with Deano, who was really polar bear, and it was heartwarming to see how happy he was to know his baby was alive and safe. The pig we had named Polar Bear had been found abandoned, lying in a pile of blankets in a neighborhood park, February 2023. A policeman comforted the frightened, cold pig until we got there. This was certainly not a pig who had wandered off by himself with a bunch of blankets. Being a bit overweight, Polar Bear was placed on one of our smaller fields, assisted living phase 3, where he currently lives with little Debbie, Kitty, and Bubba. He is slimmed down and looks wonderful. At first, Mike wanted to take him home, but then realized that Deano had the home that he had wished for, the space, the room to roam along with the other additional bonus of piggy friends. It was an amazing twist of fate that placed Mike at the sanctuary that day, but now he can rest easy with the knowledge that Deano, now Polar Bear, will always be loved and cared for properly at the Ironwood Pig Sanctuary. This article, titled United and written by Donna, one of the people at the sanctuary, comes from the Ironwood Pig Sanctuary newsletter, February 2026. Our next article comes from Best Friends magazine, the May-June 2026 edition. Their slogan, Together We Can Save Them All. The article is titled, The Best Smile, Sweet Reunion Seals the Adoption Deal. Shortly after Eugene came to the Best Friends Pet Resource Center in Bentonville, Arkansas, he headed into a foster home with Nikki and Jason. He fits so well into their family, which includes another dog, Roger, that they were close to adopting him. But no, they thought, they should give other people a chance to choose him. They made themselves bring him back to the center to meet potential adopters with one caveat. If no one adopted him that day, they'd take it as a sign. Not only was Eugene still there at the end of the day, he greeted Nikki and Jason with gentle full-body wiggles, then climbed into Nikki's lap and all but hugged her, with his eyes closed and his floppy mouth curved up into a smile. His sheer joy at seeing them again was enough to dispel any doubts that they had about whether he would join their family. Now he's home, he's smiling with them, and his new canine brother right where he has always meant to be. This article is titled The Best Smile. Continuing from the Best Friends magazine, Humphrey's Magic PJs. A stocky pup with perky ears and a hopeful expression, Humphrey immediately captured the hearts after arriving at Best Friends in Salt Lake City from an Arizona shelter. Though his past was a mystery, he had several health challenges to overcome. His first stop was with the veterinarian for a thorough checkup and a treatment plan. Then the foster team placed him with an experienced foster family so he could heal and decompress in a home. Part of the process included giving him a new wardrobe, cute, cozy pajamas, to be specific. Humphrey's PJs helped protect his sensitive skin and kept him comfy while he rested and recovered. He took swimming lessons to strengthen his joints, and his foster family fed him a special diet so he could gain weight and stay healthy. Their gentle guidance and loving care helped Humphrey feel safe. With a consistent routine and lots of snuggly naps in those magic PJs, Humphrey blossomed, his skin cleared, he put on some pounds, and he started showing off his affectionate personality and his style. Now adopted, Humphrey is enjoying a life full of love and comfort, and the PJs wherever he wants to wear them, he does. This article, Humphrey's Magic PJs, appeared in Best Friends Magazine, the May-June 2026 edition. Well, that brings us to the conclusion of our show for today. I do hope you've enjoyed the readings, and I invite you back again next time to hear more stories about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Until then, this is Joyce for Animal Companions and for Sun Sounds of Arizona, a radio reading service. Be healthy, everyone. Stay happy. Stay healthy. Bye-bye.